Hey again, family and friends, and welcome to another episode of Awareness, the podcast, fostering a more compassionate, empathetic, and accepting society. Yours truly here, Rob Daniels, with you. This is officially episode number 11. Episode 11. Incredible. So thank you so much for watching, listening to this podcast, wherever you happen to get your podcasts. Appreciate if you could subscribe, and it would certainly mean a lot. Of course, we're doing some great things with mental health here with Awareness, the podcast. And before we get things going, I want to give a quick shout out to my good buddy, Ben Davey. He was actually on an earlier episode of Awareness. If you do like a little bit of an awareness rewind, you can catch his episode. He's the play-by-play guy for the Barrie BayCats. This week, he's doing the Sunrise Challenge with Cam H. So you can watch all of his Sunrise Challenge videos. I believe he was somewhere in the downtown Toronto core today and in the city of Vaughan yesterday. And I'm sure he's got more routes planned. So follow him, Ben Davey, on Facebook, and I am Ben Davey on Instagram, and you'll be happy you did. Right now, I'm happy to introduce to you our very next guest. And she is, I didn't want to really screw up her last name. We talked about this off the podcast. We were like, I'm like, can you say my last name? She said to me, Lisa, and I'm like, I'm going to try. So let's see if I get this correct right off the hop on the pod. Lisa McManaman.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thankfully, yep. Lisa McManaman. And Lisa McManaman, I'm telling you, I'm chatting with a hero in every sense of the word. Her name is Lisa. And you know, this is the thing. This is why I started this show, is because I want people to relate and be able to share their story when it comes to mental health, their journey, what they've done in their life, their livelihood, their everyday struggles, how they've overcome, how they manage. So Lisa, she used to be a nurse at SickKids in Toronto, and you may have had a visit there with your family for a child, and one day she wasn't able to do the job any longer. Now, she started in 2008, stopped working in 2011. So that's what, about 2017. So wait, you were there for 10 years? What is that?
My math. Shy of 10 years.
Just shy of 10 years as a nurse working at SickKids in Toronto, which is an incredible run, if you ask me. After everything you go through on a day-to-day basis, there is got to be challenging for sure. So what I would like to ask from you is, like, why don't you walk us through your nursing story? I mean, your bravery to continue to serve in that field for as long as you could, and why you ultimately had to move on from that career.
Yeah, so I did my nursing degree and then started working in 2008. I was a new graduate hire, so I had extra protected training. And then I worked on an organ transplant unit at SickKids for 3 years. And then I transitioned to the pediatric ICU. Was there for 6 years. And I always loved working with kids. I was, into babysitting, and I was a swimming instructor and a lifeguard, and I worked at day camps. So for me, I always liked the sciences and healthcare and working with kids. And I went for, unfortunately, a very kind of tough place to work. I did it as long as I could. Yeah. I loved it. I enjoyed going to work. And then eventually my body said no more. My nervous system, my brain, everything just said no more in 2017.
And but you were in which units? You split that time up was between.
Was an organ transplant unit.
Yeah.
So an inpatient, kind of more long-term.
Yeah.
Area long-term. For kids age newborn up to 18.
Yeah.
And then I went down to the critical care unit, which is split into a cardiac ICU and a med-surg ICU.
Okay.
So I was on the med-surg side. So anyone who needed an organ transplant, or car accidents, or meningitis, or really bad flu or RSV for the babies. So we saw a huge range of diagnoses and conditions. And that's what I liked about it, though. It was always something new and it kept me on my toes, and it was a one-to-one patient assignment usually. Mm-hmm. So we had the intubated, sedated, tons of drains, tons of monitors, infusions and medications, and it
infusions. Wow, that's actually so that I can relate to that. I do some of those for chronic pain. Actually, are we talking about like lidocaine and ketamine, that type of infusion?
Fentanyl. Oh boy, hydromorphone. Yeah, inotropes or vasopressors. So like the epinephrine, the norepi, and the dopamine infusions, and literally a minute by minute infusion to help maintain someone's blood pressure, say, to help maintain their heart rate at a stable level.
What are the dopamine infusions? That's interesting.
So what's dopamine that? Is just a different inotrope, a different vasopressor. So it increases your blood pressure. It's nothing to do with like dopamine responders and like, you know, ADHD kind of stuff.
So it's nothing to do with like
your cardiovascular system.
Okay. Nothing to do with helping with like depression.
I think we used to call it like a squeezer. It helps with your diastolic and systolic pressure in your heart.
But ultimately, you had to call it quits. I'm sure not calling it quits from helping people in general in your life and being purposeful, but ultimately your everyday job. And what was the exact diagnosis that you had to, that you went through and mm-hmm. and that you feel like revealing here today?
Yeah, I'm an open book. I went off work. I just thought something was wrong. I had all these physical symptoms, no appetite, couldn't sleep, was just starting to feel really down, no energy. And so I went to my family doctor, eventually went off work on a sick leave for 2 weeks, and then eventually started my way through the process of seeing a psychiatrist and a psychologist and getting a PTSD diagnosis with major depressive disorder. I'm going to say the major depressive disorder has thankfully lifted. I'm on medication. And the PTSD, I don't know if this is a real term or not, but I like to say that it's in remission right now.
It's in remission.
It's not actively hijacking my life.
Yeah.
Every day.
Which it was at the beginning.
It totally was. Yeah.
For how long?
Oh my goodness. I'd say the really, really acute stuff was probably for 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah. Of like, so I used to be super fit and active and I wore my Fitbit, and I saw in a 2 to 3 month span, my resting heart rate when I was sleeping jumped 20 beats per minute on average. So like just my resting state was jacked up. My blood pressure was higher. I was physically trembling. Like I always kind of joked that I was like a scared chihuahua in a corner. Like I was shaking. I would startle really easy. I was having nightmares. I was insomniac. Like I couldn't sleep at all. I was trying to take medications for it, and it was a long time. Yeah, yeah. A long battle. And then added the depression on top of it, and I lost a lot of weight, and I couldn't be active because I was a very highly physically active person before. I thought that helped my mental health. Yeah. And then that was taken away. My body couldn't handle the extra stress load of exercise. So the entire lifestyle completely crumbled and changed.
And you were just off work instantly for those 2 years, every single day.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I've been off work since 2017. So I've reached my 8-year mark, which is wild to me that it's been that long. Another thing was, because it was a work-related injury, calling it.
Yeah.
My doctor advised me to apply for WSIB.
Yeah.
And they have a psychological trauma wing. They have like the physical injury wing, and then they have their psychological injury section. Okay. So it was a bit of a process. I think it took about 3 months. Yeah. I had to kind of prove my case, but I got approved for WSIB, which was huge because I therefore had income coming in.
So
I lived on my own at the time. I pretty much had to return home and move in with my mom because like I was not functioning. She recalls that I was like a shell of a person, like a ghost just floating around her house.
But with sick kids doing what they do and the compassion that they provide, I want to know, do they show that same compassion to their employees? Like, what did they do for you in that 2-year span?
They didn't provide a ton of support. I think they weren't like they weren't really sure what to do with me. They treated me like a physical injury, okay, having to fill out kind of evaluation forms and questionnaire forms about like, how long can I stand? How long can I sit?
Okay.
But I was like, this isn't a back injury. This is a mental health injury.
Yeah.
So, they weren't the greatest. They didn't really provide a lot of support. Like I called the EAP line that they provide. That was just someone to kind of listen to, but I had to find my own therapist. I had to, prove my WSIB case. They kind of fought at me against it. Not overly supportive. I don't know if things have changed since I've left. I hope so. But that is one thing I'd like to maybe venture into, is see if I can keep contact with someone there and be like, can we start some kind of mental health support, even peer support program or something? I believe they have implemented that, but I haven't been there for a long time, so I'm not sure.
Hey, maybe that's your new purpose in life.
Maybe,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you also, I want to know basically, like, talk about what you personally found to be the most helpful treatments when you dealt with post-traumatic stress disorder. Like, was there anything specific that you'd recommend to anyone else that might be going through it, mm-hmm, that is going through it, let's say?
Definitely find yourself a good therapist. I know those are hard to find, but they are popping up a heck of a lot more than they were before. A trauma-informed, trauma-trained. I saw a psychotherapist, and because there's a lot of differentiation between, I never knew the difference between a psychiatrist, psychologist, and psychotherapist.
Feel free to reveal.
There is a difference between all three. Psychiatrist, my opinion is they are the pill pusher. Mm-hmm. They will give you the diagnosis and they will give you medication. The psychologist is more of the therapist kind of role. They cannot prescribe, but they can, provide therapy and talk to you. They are OHIP covered as well as psychiatrists. Mm-hmm. And then psychotherapists are not OHIP covered, but they're the therapists. They provide the talk therapy and other modalities, but they are not usually covered. So you have to pay out of pocket for them, unless you have health benefits.
Which
I did, but I exhausted very quickly because a session is like,
yeah, it's very expensive. I know. So, I mean, mental health, this is sort of gradually, moving forward with that and trying to be a bit more compassionate. Like I've noticed they've got that 24/7 line, emergency line. Mm-hmm, do you know what it is often? It's the tech,
I saw a sign on the highway driving here. 211.
211. That's it. 211. Yeah. Call it anytime. An emergency.
Mental health crisis. Call 211.
Yeah. But I know what you mean, that it should be in this day and age more affordable, especially after what we've gone on with in the last 5 years in this world. World needs more of that, right? So there you go. What would you say to, let's say, any former colleagues that you... I mean, is there any former colleagues that you keep in touch with from there?
Yeah, I have a few friends. One in particular, she's actually off work as well with PTSD. She's about 4 years into her journey. Mm-hmm. We used to work together in the ICU. So just the fact that right there, you are not alone. You are not the only one. You are not crazy. You are not broken. It happens. Paramedics, firefighters, police are all considered to have a traumatic job. Mm-hmm. We do too. And I know even back in the day, my doctor said to me, oh, but you're a nurse. You knew what you signed up for. And that was like a slap in the face. Because I was like, well, so do paramedics and so do firefighters. And, we see people on their worst day as well. And we deal with children. And from my experience, because I've been in a lot of peer support groups with first responders, most of them always say their worst calls are the ones involving children. And my entire career involved children. So I think that kind of gives a little insight into the trauma and the stuff we would see. But just to say, like, reach out to a therapist, tell someone, talk about it. Tell your boss, tell your doctor, and just kind of get the ball rolling, because
I think of this though as a it's very immediate when you're working your job. Like, you got to be on the ball, and out of any, like, the focus has got to be so sharp for what you did. So I got to think mental health wise, when you're working your job and you got diagnosed, was there a specific trigger there that you can pinpoint, a certain scene you saw that you were like, this is what did me in?
In hindsight, yes. When it happened, I wasn't like, this was the worst thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It was kind of a new-ish experience for me. I don't want to get into the dirty details.
Yeah, but, yeah. What can you bring into awareness from that?
It was the first time I've seen a code be stopped and a declaration of death on the spot. I hadn't experienced that as a nurse. Mm-hmm. We usually always can get a return of circulation back until then and stabilize them and then start to do the kind of preparation of death, get the family there, do commemorative memorial things. But that didn't happen. And it was all very sudden and call the time of death. And I was kind of, and myself and the parents were very much like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what? We need to do more.
Right.
So that was very kind of jarring, I think, to my psyche and my system. And and then there was another event that happened a month later. And that one, I recall when I got home from my shift, my 12-hour shift, saying to a friend, like, oh my God, I feel like my senses were assaulted today.
Wow, yeah.
Like sights, smell, touches. Like, yeah, I just was overwhelmed. It's a lot.
It brings back, I'm sure, a lot of triggering memories. So you're strong for doing this 150%. So what do you do to sort of, if you go back into those thoughts, like if you're talking now and I notice like, and I do this as well, where you sometimes have these deep breaths. Do you do breath work a lot?
Yeah. So a lot of my healing has been a lot of trial and error. I've always kind of loved body work and this, you know, physiology of stuff. And so I've gotten a lot into somatics, I'd say, somatic healing, somatic movements.
Meditation. So
just like shaking things out, because I found I was like kind of frozen and stuck.
Okay.
A lot. So even in therapy, my therapist had me practice saying like no and putting my hands out.
Yeah.
And like that would cause bawling.
Yeah.
And panic attacks and whatever. But so yeah, somatics I'd say has been a big help. Learning about the nervous system has mm-hmm. been a big help. Because I always knew about the nervous, like the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system
parts. Right.
But just knowing about there's different movements and exercises and like your vagus nerve, humming, singing, chanting, deep breathing. I can meditate now. I couldn't before.
Yeah.
I remember closing my eyes and I would see fireworks in my head. Like everything was just too.
I noticed that sometimes wired. Too. I try it. Or there's just, you see, I don't know, almost like that, like a snowy TV screen sometimes yes. when you close your eye and it's just like when the power's out or something.
Yeah,
sometimes
yeah,
that right. happens, but it's in like orange and red or okay. something. I don't know. Okay. Yeah. I guess we, yeah.
Yeah. So like back, you know, a couple of years ago, people kept saying meditate. And I was like, I can't. So I had to start with like literally 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Or like 15 seconds. And then build up progressively to like a minute or 2 minutes.
Right.
Now I'm going to say, I'm proud to say I can do 15 minutes.
That's incredible.
I put on my solfeggio frequencies.
Yeah.
Which is like a singing bowl kind of thing. And I have a little eye pillow and I lay on my spiky mat and I just like meditate for 15 minutes. I set a timer. And
do you listen to any music or?
That's what the frequencies are.
Oh, it's the
like
okay.
Like tones.
Yeah.
That's another thing I've gotten into. I'm going to say I've ventured into a lot of like the stuff I used to call woo-woo.
Right.
And like the spiritual stuff, but it's definitely helped me reconnect to my body. I was so cut off from myself. From like, because even just at work, working 12-hour shifts in the ICU, you couldn't leave the bedside unless you had someone covering you, right? So your desire to eat, to drink, to go use the bathroom couldn't just be whenever you wanted.
Like
you'd literally sometimes had to ask permission as an adult. Can I go to the bathroom, please? And oh no, can you wait an hour?
Yeah.
So like I said, I was cut off from the neck down for a long time because I was all in my head and I was like never connected to my body. So it's taken a long time to build that trust and that connection back with myself again.
Yeah, I bet. I just wanted to quickly touch on one of the last couple of things here is I've talked to a couple of nurses that they're sort of shying away from wanting to be on this program because of the fact that the health crisis. There is a crisis, I would say, in the U.S. with nurse shortages. Do you know anything about that at all? Like with the nurses being treated the way they are in the U.S. compared to Canada? Do you know any of that
at
all? Not fully? No. Okay.
No, I've never worked in the States. I don't really know.
Yeah. But right now, do you feel like in Canada, we still need some improvements? Because the U.S. Absolutely. I think needs a ton. Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I follow ONA's like Instagram and stuff, and they're right now pushing for staffing ratios.
Okay.
Because they keep trying to get away with having less and less nurses, and then therefore like 7, 8, 9 patients per nurse.
Wow.
Which is unheard of.
Yeah.
SickKids was very nice that the max patient load you'd ever have was 3.
Yeah.
3 to 4. And then in the ICU, it was 1 to 2, depending.
I just can't imagine you were on your feet for 12-hour shifts for that. And you have good running shoes back then.
Yes, I did. I wear orthotics and sometimes even compression stockings.
Because it's a lot.
Because, it's a lot. And then, like, the bending and the, like, you would have to roll my patients over every 4 hours so they don't get bed sores because they're not moving, right?
Yeah.
And like changing diapers on a teenager is a lot of work, right? So you have to like, you're reaching and it's a very physically demanding job, especially the night shifts too. Staying up for 12 hours and fighting your body, wanting to sleep at 3 a.m. and then trying to sleep during the day. It's very unnatural. And my system just couldn't take it anymore.
Well, I must say, I have to thank you for your service for working in healthcare because you probably, I don't know if you got enough credit. Maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but I don't think you get, you can't say enough thanks for the type of work that you did, you still want to do, but, maybe you can help your family members, but I know what, you did 8 or 9 years, which, 9 years,
nine years.
Yeah. So like you served like such an incredible purpose, which not many people can say they've done. And that's like very, it's something you should be totally proud of, regardless of what happened with, the PTSD. So you've turned your nursing license, in and you're feeling stabilized. You're feeling healthier now. You're still very young. Like, do you have anything planned? What's next for you? Do you still like plan to work in another field? Is there a profession?
So I'm kind of exploring that right now. I'm calling it medically retired, my nursing license. I did that just at the beginning of this year in January 2025. Mm-hmm. So I'm no longer a registered nurse.
Yeah.
And I've been locked into my WSIB benefits. So I receive those until I'm 65 years old.
Okay.
And then, yes, I'm almost 40, so I still have like another whole career left in me, I think.
Yeah.
So I have given myself permission though this year to just kind of relax and not put pressure on, because WSIB at one point was putting pressure on return to work, return to some kind of form of employment, some kind of form of education, like a re-education, retraining. And every time that was brought up, it seemed to destabilize me. So now that I've been locked in, I definitely have a lot more relief. I can feel that I feel lighter this like 2025 since those decisions have been made. So I'm just kind of exploring this year and a couple things, like I'm more interested in the creative side of things, I think.
Okay.
Medical and sciencey for like my first act in life.
Yeah.
And then second act, I'm even dabbling with the idea of being like a sound bath facilitator.
Okay.
I've done a couple sound baths in my healing.
What can you quickly explain what that is?
That is an incredible experience. So I've done a one-on-one sessions with a beautiful sound bath facilitator, and it includes, I think, 7 to 9 different instruments. So like the singing bowls, if you like the Tibetan bowls, Yeah, your producers.
Oh, yeah.
Then like a gong and chimes and a rain stick. And she goes for like an hour and a half maybe. And you're laying on like a massage table, really comfy, cozy. And she just does these and tuning forks. And she even puts the bowls on my chest or next to my ears, like on a table. And the sound waves and the frequency going through. Oh, it's just, there's science to it. It calms your nervous system. It, I think, works on your vagus nerves, I believe. Yeah. It helped, I think, downregulate me a bit. And I found it really, really cool. And I had been kind of exploring possibly getting training to do that.
Why not? A second career path. Yeah, I think that'd be a good choice for you. Yeah. It activates those brain waves that you feel like
we are frequency. We are kind of an electronic system. And after my first experience, I was like, I feel like a guitar that's just been tuned. It was really incredible.
Good. So I'm happy for you. And I hope it, I hope it happens.
Thank you. Yeah, let's see.
Lisa McManaman, thank you so much for dropping by Awareness today. I got to give you a hug for everything you've been through. And I wish you all good things going forward. Okay, so there you go. It's another edition of Awareness, the podcast, fostering a more compassionate, empathetic, and accepting society. Episode number 11 in the books. Don't forget to like and subscribe where you can. That would certainly be meaningful. For producer Mike, I'm Rob Daniels, and we'll catch you in the next episode.